Welcome, everybody. Today we have the pleasure to interview Dr. Ferran Nadeo from the Institut d'Investigación Biomedic August P. Sunyer from Barcelona, Spain. Ferran, many thanks for having accepted our invitation. How are you today?
I'm fine, thank you. I'm very glad to be here and to discuss our paper. So thank you very much for the invitation.
So today we speak about your recent Nature Medicine paper, and congrats on that, entitled Detection of Early Seeding of Richter Transformation in Chronic Lymphocytic Leukemia. So to start, can you give us a little overview of the medical problem of your research and why is important to identify early CLL patients at risk of Richter transformation?
Yeah, sure. So this study, as the title said, as you mentioned, focuses on Richter transformation, which is a peculiar clinical course in CLL. As you probably all the audience will know, CLL or chronic lymphocytic leukemia is quite an indolent leukemia of B cells with a slow growing phase in most of the patients. But in some of the patients, this small B cells might transform into a high-grade lymphoma, usually diffuse large B-cell lymphoma, and this is what we call Richter transformation. And this is probably the main bottleneck to treat and to kind of cure CLL patients. And basically in this study, what we aim to do is to try to better understand which are the genomic factors that drive this transformation of the indolent leukemia to the very aggressive Richter transformation, trying to better identify which may be potential new therapies or how to better diagnose. And basically we decided to start this study to face the clinical problem that you was mentioning, that I think that we should like highlight two main issues here. First is this, that I think that there is no very good treatment options for this subgroup of patients. And the second one is that once we diagnose, me not, I'm a very informatician, but the hematologist and the pathologist diagnoses a patient with Richter syndrome, the prognosis of the patient is very, very bad. Usually the 50% overall survival is less than 1 year. So it means that we probably are diagnosing too late these patients and we don't have good treatment options for them. So still a window of opportunity for improvement.
That's right. And this is why we need study like yours, detecting early patient at higher risk of transformation. But first of all, what was the study design and how did you accrue such precious samples that span almost 20 years of clinical practice, now of a patient journey with CLL? That was impressive.
Yeah, in this study, we focused on 19 CLL patients that develop Richter transformation. And as you said, some of these patients develop this Richter transformation after many, many years from the diagnosis of the CLL. So many things happen in between the diagnosis of the CLL and the Richter transformation. So what we did was we were lucky that in our biobank, which started more than 20 years ago, Elias Campo and colleagues decided that it would be a good idea to start keeping cells cryopreserved all over the disease course of our patients, because at some time point, we might want to study these cells back in time to try to understand the evolution of the disease. So we basically take advantage of this biobank that we have in our IDIBAT Hospital Clinic of Barcelona, in which hematologists, pathologists, and all the people from the biobank are cryopreserving cells at many different time points. And what we did was basically took this for these 19 CLL patients that developed Richter transformation. We took these longitudinal samples from CLL diagnosis to Richter transformation, and we analyzed them using different bulk and single cell techniques.
And you first started with the genomic characterization of patients who transformed to Richter syndrome and compare to the genomic landscape with that of CLL diagnosis. Can I ask you, what did you find? What was interesting in your results?
Yeah, this was our first question, was like the simple one, let's say. Let's try to identify which are the main genetic alterations that might drive this transformation, right? So basically what we find when we analyze the whole genome sequencing of all these longitudinal samples from CLL diagnosis to Richter transformation, was try to identify which are those genes that are altered more frequently in Richter transformation that might be more important for this. And basically we found that these driver genes cluster in a limited set of biological pathways. As it's already known in the literature, virtually all Richter samples have alterations in cell cycle pathway, such as TP53 mutations, CDKN2A alterations, but we also found new alterations, translocations and other structural alterations that involve other cell cycle regulators, such as cyclin D3, or CDK6, for instance. And we also found many mutations in Richter that were not present in the CLL phase of the disease that were involved in MYC pathway, NF-kappa-B pathway, or chromatin remodeling. But what was more important, I think, or more interesting, is that we have the whole genome of these tumors, and we can not only look at individual genes, but have a more broader picture of what the genome looks like. And we found that the genomic of the Richter is much more complex than the genome of the CLL. For to give you just a few numbers, you may know that CLL is very boring or stable in terms of copy number alterations, with very few alterations, no much structural variants. In the Richter, we found more than 20 copy number alterations per case, more than 40 chromosomal alterations, such as translocations and so on. And most of these very complex alterations were acquired in single events, such as in chromotripsis and cataregesis, which are processes that introduce quite a genomic chaos into the tumor cells. So basically, just to summarize this, your question, more genomic complexity in Richter, and many drivers in cell cycle, MYC, and NF-kappa-B.
So let me ask you this for our trainees. You mentioned genomic events such as chromotripsis and cataregesis. Can you explain for our trainees what do they entail and why in this context are these events important?
Yes, so starting with chromotripsis, for instance, chromotripsis is the name that we give to a phenomenon that introduces many, many chromosomal alterations. Many means hundreds or even thousands of chromosomal alterations in a very small region of a chromosome or in a few chromosomes. So said in other words, the cell, the DNA of a cell can be shattered in many pieces. And when the mechanisms of repair try to repair this genomic task, they introduce errors. And then we see many deletions, inversions, and genomic alterations in a particular region of the genome. And this is important in our study because we found that many of the driver genes, such as CDKN2A deletions, are usually targeted by these chromotriptic events that, in addition to target CDKN2A, also target other driver genes, such as NOT1, MGA, and others. And this give you a kind of hint into the mechanism that is introducing these alterations, but also give you an idea of when these alterations are acquired and when and how. So meaning that all of them are acquired in a single catastrophic event introduces many, many driver alterations. And you also mentioned cataregesis, right?
Right.
Yeah. So cataregesis is another kind of process in which different enzymes or different factors may introduce a high number of mutations in a very, very small region of the genome. And this is important, or one of example of cataregesis that probably most people here will be aware of is what the mutations that are introduced by the AID enzyme or activation-induced deaminase enzyme that introduce mutation in the monoglobulin gene. These mutations are acquired in a very narrow region of the DNA. This is what we call cataregesis. And we see in Richter that this processes are kind of reactivated, and we see mutations of this form in many mutations in a very small region of the genome that are associated then with translocations that lead, for instance, to MECN translocation and amplification and other mechanisms. So it's just a matter to try to understand the processes that are behind these alterations and driver alterations that we are seeing.
Thank you. And so now let's go back to your study. And thank you for this genomic insight. Can you tell us more about the mutational signatures you identified early in time in these patients? And what is the implication of finding this signature?
Yeah, this is one of, I think, the best, very nice question, because it's one of the key points of our study, I think. Because our whole genome sequencing analysis of all these longitudinal samples from CLL to Richter allow us, as I mentioned, not to just identify diverse genes, but to have a broader picture of the genome. And what we found also is that Richter samples have a higher mutational burden, so many more mutations than the previous CLL. And the question was that when we saw this, is which are the processes that are introducing these mutations in the genome of the Richter cells that are not active in the CLL cell. So to do that, we perform this mutational signature analysis. In case that someone is not familiar with this, a mutational signature is very simple. It's just a combination of a specific mutation types that are associated to specific mutational processes. So for example, going back to the AID, when AID introduces mutation in the genome, these mutations have particular profiles. For instance, C2T in a specific nucleotide context. So this imprint can be recognized and is a signature that we can associate to AID, for instance. So we perform this analysis to try to identify which mutational processes were active in CLL and Richter. And it was very intriguing that we found three mutational signatures that were present in Richter that we never see that in CLL before. And what was more important was that these signatures were related to therapies that the patient received during the CLL phase of the disease. So going one by one, very quickly, we identify in one patient more than 1,000 mutations that were associated with treatment with ganciclovir. That, as you might know, ganciclovir is given to patients when there is a reactivation of cytomegalovirus. There is a very nice paper published a few months ago. I don't remember now the journal, sorry, but you can find it on Google, that easy for sure, that identified this mutational signature. So we are seeing this in a patient, in the genome of a Richter sample collected from a patient that received ganciclovir 3 years before the Richter transformation. The second signature is related to the alkylating Cajun melphalan, in which two of our Richter patients received melphalan as a conditioning of their allogeneic stem cell transplant up to 4 years before the Richter transformation. It was a transplant to try to cure or to solve the CLL problem, not the Richter, so many years before. So we are seeing hundreds of mutations associated to this therapy. And the third signature that we identified was the more surprising to us, was a novel signature that has been never described in any tumor type yet. And we saw this in 6 Richter samples, that when we look which were the treatments that this patient received during their CLL phase, we identified that all these 6 cases received either bendamustine or chlorambucil, 2 alkylating agents that were given to the patients during the CLL phase as well, up to 7 years prior Richter transformation. And these mutations account for up to 1,000 mutations in the genome of the Richter transform. So this analysis, thing that shows at least 2 important things. One is how these treatments that are based on mutagenic effects on the DNA may introduce hundreds or thousands of mutations in the cell, that if this cell can resist, this may enhance the aggressiveness of the cell because some of these mutations were driver mutations. And the second is if we are identifying in the Richter sample a signature that was introduced by a therapy up to 7 years before the treatment, the Richter, that means that the cell that gave rise to the Richter transformation was already there for 7 years, which was quite off. You know, when we saw this,
that's impressive.
Okay, that's, it's not, we were not expecting that from a very aggressive transformation, right?
Yeah, and this is consequential having such a good biobank to study over such a long span of time during the CLL patient's journey, these phenomena. So were you also able to study the phylogeny of the patients for whom you had multiple sampling from the CLL diagnosis to Richter transformation? And are these events de novo, or as you said, some of them were already present early in time at the CLL diagnosis?
Yeah. We did this kind of phylogenetic reconstruction using our whole genome sequencing data, but also using single cell DNA-seq, which you sequence a number of mutations at the individual single cells, and also using single cell RNA-seq. And just to give the spoiler, let's say, we found that the Richter cell was there for many years with all the drivers or most of the drivers and the transcriptomic identity and was dormant. And how we get this or arrive to this conclusion is, as you said, we with the whole genome, we could reconstruct the evolution of the subclones over the disease course, because we have up to 7 time points or 6 time points per case. And what we mean by reconstructing the phylogeny means that we can see how many subclones are in each of these time points and which of these subclones expand or decrease in size during the different therapies. We found that the Richter subclone was already present in the very initial time points, including CLL diagnosis up to 20 years before the transformation in some of the cases. And when we performed single cell DNA sequencing, we could identify in this very small number of cells that were already present at CLL diagnosis, the TP53 mutation, for instance, that was present in the Richter transformation. So saying that these driver alterations that are important may be there. And also using single cell RNA sequencing, we could identify Richter-like cells in terms that they have the same transcriptome that the Richter transform that we see when the transformation is diagnosed already in these initial phases. So meaning that there are in the whole tumor of the CLL, there is much of heterogeneity, and some of these cells could be potential already Richter cells that can be there dormant. So it's not that the CLL have already all the drivers, but that a few CLL cells are already potential Richter cells that carry these driver alterations, these transcriptomic changes, and so on. And also very, very, very interesting is that using single cell RNA-seq, we could try to identify these chromotryptic events that we were mentioning just before, but not in the last sample, in the Richter transformation, but in each individual cell. And we could identify in some of these very initial Richter-like cells that were present there for 20 years, they already carried these complex chromotryptic events and this all these driver alterations. So it was like, oh, you know, 20 years before you have a massive tumor diversification, which you can have already the seeds of this very aggressive transformation carrying all these alterations.
Also, like, very surprising to know that, like, few cell can like have such devastating chromosomal events and are so genomic instable, but also can stay dormant for such a long time, right?
Yeah, this is one probably more an open question that remains after the study than we don't have many good answers. Probably we can talk about that. The transcriptome of these cells might have something to do with that.
Yeah, and also, actually, I was about to ask you, so you said you perform transcriptomic on these samples. Can you explain which conclusion you can draw from these and if you find any patterns associated with the Richter transformation?
Yeah, yes, we perform this transcriptome analysis using both bulk RNA-seq, comparing Richter sample versus CLL samples, and also using this single cell RNA-seq where you can compare clusters of cells versus clusters of cells. And basically the results using both techniques were very much the same. We identified almost 2000 genes that were differentially expressed between CLL and Richter, which is not much surprising because, you know, that one is a small cell, the other one is a bigger cell. So if morphologically they are different, they should be different also in terms of transcriptome, right? But when we look a bit more in detail, we found a number of pathways that were differentially modulated in CLL and Richter that for us were quite interesting. For instance, we see a lot of upregulation of MYC-related pathways and proliferation, which makes sense because Richter is somehow more proliferative. But also we found that the Richter cells were kind of more dependent on metabolic pathways. We saw an upregulation of the oxidative phosphorylation pathways and many other mitochondrial pathways. And this is important because there are a number of studies in other lymphomas, such as diffuse large B-cell lymphoma or mantle cell lymphoma, in which this increase in metabolic pathways, such as oxidative phosphorylation pathway, may be associated to resistance to novel therapies. And I forgot to say that some of our Richter transformation occur after treatment with these BCR inhibitors like ibrutinib, or BCL2 inhibitors like venetoclax. So the transcriptome and also the epigenome, we analyzed the chromatin activity and so on, everything pointed out that these cells are more dependent of metabolic activity. And also quite surprising was that the transcriptome showed that these Richter cells have a low BCR signaling capacity or less activation of the BCR signaling pathway. And also is important because, as I said, this Richter occur after treatment with a BCR inhibitor. So if we are inhibiting a pathway that is already downmodulated in the cells, maybe we are just favoring this selection. And indeed, this higher oxidative pathway, oxidative phosphorylation pathway, and downmodulation of the B-cell receptor pathway has been described a few years ago in diffuse large B-cell lymphoma, for instance, or in a subset of diffuse large B-cell lymphoma that are insensitive to BCR inhibition. So just to have a long story to try to answer your question, that maybe these dormant cells were not that dormant, but they have low BCR signaling and have other pathways that may not be that aggressive if there is a bulk CLL population there that may be competing for the same resources of spaces. But when you treat these patients with a BCR inhibitor, you decrease the CLL, but you are favoring the selection of these other small subclones. So that's an hypothesis, and also all these other papers that I mentioned that show that metabolic reprogramming of the cells might be a way to escape this novel therapy. So we are seeing here. And lastly, just to also add that using our single cell RNA sequencing data, we could find that this higher oxidative phosphorylation pathway and down modulation of the B cell receptor was already a phenotype of these early Richter cells that were present years before. So it's not a modulation of the metabolic pathway, but an intrinsic factor of the Richter cells that when you give a given therapy, you may favor the selection of those cells.
That's fantastic findings and results. This really enlightened us on what happened early in the disease course of a chronic disorder like CLL. Can I ask you, and this is, I promise, the last question, how do you think these findings will inform future therapeutic strategies and approaches and the management of the patients with CLL?
Yes, so just a small comment on your first part of how a massive heterogeneity is found in this chronic leukemia. I think that this study and others from others are suggesting that in an indolent leukemia, probably even years before diagnosis, we can have a massive heterogeneity of different subclones that at some point, some of them are selected, some are not. And it's not kind of linear thing that goes from CLL to CLL aggressive to Richter, but something that is very heterogeneous at the beginning. And, you know, at some point these aggressive subclones might expand. And how our findings can help to improve potential diagnosis and therapeutics. For instance, in our study, as we identified this higher dependence of the cells to the OXPHOS pathway, we realized that there are clinical trials trying to inhibit this oxidative phosphorylation pathway with a molecule that is called EAX and a number that I never remember, but it's a small molecule that can inhibit, for instance, this oxidative phosphorylation pathway. So in our study, we show how when we treat the Richter cells with this small drug, we are reducing 50% the proliferation of the cells in vitro. So just as a proof of concept that some of the pathways that we identified to be important in these cells can be potential therapeutic opportunities for the patients in the future. And probably if we combine this drug with other drugs such as venetoclax or other potential drugs may even give better results in vitro at least. And also, as we know now that in some patients, the Richter cells may be there in a small fraction of cells that we cannot probably diagnose just using the microscope and the pathologies, but probably all these single cell techniques may give us opportunity to develop algorithms to try to identify if a CLL cell is more like a Richter cell or a CLL cell and try to identify earlier or try to diagnose earlier which patients may have this small Richter subclones. Also, another point here would be in how many patients we will identify these small Richter clones in early phases, because we have just focused on patients that develop the transformation.
You were receiving my next question. I was about to ask you, like, it would be nice to know if, like, the one who didn't develop have well, we expect they don't have this kind of cells, right?
Yeah, but maybe they have it and they are controlled by microenvironmental cells, or they don't have, I don't know,
therapies, right?
And therapies that select them. So it's also one of our next questions, right, to understand or to see how many subclones of these can be identified in a general population. And maybe we get another surprise to see in all patients there are small Richter subclones that never exploit, you know.
Right. So I see you have already an agenda for your future.
Yeah, this project opened more questions than answers, but
That's why we love research. So Ferran, I really want to congratulate with you again on your research, and thank you very much for accepting our invitation. And for everybody listening, stay tuned for the next episode of ADM Teacher Training Pearls.
Thank you very much again for the invitation. It was a real pleasure.
Goodbye.